When he at last took his place atop her, she totally and unashamedly succumbed to her need. She felt cradled not only in the canopy bed, but in his ardent embrace. At long last, as her whole body stiffened with her cry of release, she could hear the spirits sing. Chapter 40. Like a hawk in a dive, Colin silently shot ahead, and at the same time, like an eagle in an updraft, she serenely hovered in place. Light and dark, heat and cold, time and distance had no meaning, yet they meant everything. It was a marvelous confusion of sensations, heightened by the sweet presence of the sliff, each time Colin drew the living quicksilver into her lungs, into her soul. It was rapture. With an abrupt explosion of perception, it ended. Light erupted in Colin's vision. Sounds of birds, breezes, and bugs hurt her ears. Trees draped with streamers of moss, rocks encrusted with lichen and snarled in roots and vines, and patches of damp, dark mist crowded in all around. The overpowering presence of it all terrified her.
"Breathe,"
the sliff told her. The thought horrified her.
"No."
The sliff's voice seemed to sear through Colin's mind.
"Breathe."
Colin didn't want to be thrust from the serene womb of the sliff into this garish, loud world. She remembered Richard, and with Richard, the threat to him. Shota. Colin expelled the sliff from her lungs. The liquid silver sloughed from her, yet she was not wet. She gasped a deep breath of the strange, sharp air. She covered her ears and shut her eyes as the sliff set her on the edge of the well.
"We are where you wished to travel," the sliff said.
Colin reluctantly opened her eyes and lowered her hands. The living world seemed to slow and settle into harmony with what she expected it to be. The comforting hand of the sliff slipped from Colin's waist.
"Thank you, sliff. It was a pleasure."
The sliff's fluid face smiled.
"I am pleased that you found it pleasurable.
I hope not to be long, and then we must travel back."
"I will be ready when you wish to travel again,"
the sliff said, her voice echoing out into the gloom.
"I am always ready to travel if I am awake."
Colin swung her legs down off the stone wall of the sliff's well. Parts of an ancient structure were visible, but it seemed mostly to have crumbled into the damp, tangled forest. She could see a bit of a wall here, half of a column there, some paving stones on the ground, all covered with vines and roots and leaves. Colin didn't know exactly where she was, but she knew she was in the somber woods around the witch woman's home. Colin remembered going through this dangerous, mysterious forest when Shota had captured her and taken her to Agaden Reach in order to draw Richard there. Jagged peaks, like a wreath of thorns, sheltered the murky forest high up in the vast spine of the Rang Shada Mountains. The dark and dangerous woods, in turn, surrounded and protected Shota's remote home. These woods kept people away from Agaden Reach, away from the witch woman. Whoops, clicks, and calls echoed through the stagnant stink. Colin rubbed her arms, even though the air was damp and warm. Her chill came from within. Through small, rare gaps in the forest canopy, Colin could detect the pink glow of the sky. It must be just dawn. She knew that the brightening day would bring no relief to the gloom of these woods. On the sunniest day, this morose place was never anything more than dismally dark. Colin stepped carefully, watching the forest floor, the hanging vines, and the drifting fog that seemed to conceal creatures issuing strings of hissing clicks and hooting calls. In the expanses of stagnant water lurking under the thick vegetation, she could see eyes just breaking the surface. Colin took another careful step and then paused. She realized that in the directionless forest, she didn't know where she was going. There was no telling north from south, east from west. This surrounding wood looked the same in all directions. She realized, too, that she didn't even know if Shota was home. The last time Richard and Colin had seen Shota was at the Mud People's village. Shota had been driven from her home by a wizard aligned with the keeper. Shota might not be here. No. Nadine had visited her. Shota was here. Colin took another step. Something snatched her ankle and yanked her feet from under her. She landed on her back with a hard thud. A heavy, dark shape sprang onto her chest, driving the wind from her lungs. A hiss, carried on fetid breath, came from between sharp teeth packed with gray, spongy filth.
Pretty lady.
Colin gasped to catch her breath.
Samuel, get off me!
Powerful fingers squeezed her left breast. Bloodless lips drew back with a wicked grin.
Maybe Samuel eat pretty lady.
Colin pressed the point of the bone knife up into the folds of skin at Samuel's neck. She seized one of his long fingers and bent it back until he squealed and released her breast. She jabbed the knife against his throat. Maybe I'll feed you to the things in the water over there. What do you think? Shall I slit your throat, or do you want to get off me? The hairless, splotchy gray head drew back. Yellow eyes, like twin lanterns in the dim light, glared hatefully down at her. He carefully rolled to the side to let her up. Colin kept the bone knife trained on him. Dead leaves and forest debris stuck to his waxy skin. A long arm lifted to point off into the dark mist.
Mistress wants you.
How does she know I'm here? The grotesque face split with a hissing grin.
Mistress knows everything. Follow Samuel.
He skittered a few steps and then stopped to look back over his shoulder.
When Mistress is finished with you, Samuel will eat you.
I may just have something for Shota she isn't expecting. She's made a mistake this time. When I'm finished with her, you may not have a mistress. The squat figure stared, appraising her. His bloodless lips pulled back, and he hissed. Your mistress is waiting. Get going. The stocky, hairless, long-armed figure finally moved on through the undergrowth. He skirted dangers Colin didn't see, and grudgingly pointed at things for her to avoid. Vines he circumvented reached for her as she passed, but she was too far away for them to catch her. Roots Samuel bypassed snarled up, trying to snare her. The short figure, dressed only in pants held up with straps, glanced over his shoulder occasionally to make sure she followed. A couple of times he gurgled his odd laugh as he bounded along. After a time, they picked up a trail of sorts, and not long after that, the light coming through the tangled mass of branches overhead became brighter. As Colin followed the repulsive little creature, they came at last to the edge of the dark wood and the edge of a cliff. Far below lay the verdant valley where lived the witch woman. That it was as beautiful a place as any in the Midlands didn't ease the anxious knot in Colin's stomach. All around the valley, the massive rocky peaks of the surrounding mountains soared nearly straight up. The budding trees in the placid valley below swayed gently in the early morning breeze. Descending the sheer walls of rock looked to be impossible, but Colin knew from being here before that there were steps carved in the rock. Samuel led her through a morass of brush, tight trees, and fern-covered boulders to a place that would be nearly impossible to find without him to guide her. A trail hidden behind rocks, trees, ferns, and vines ran to the edge of the precipice and the steps leading down the cliff walls. Samuel pointed off, down into the valley.
Mistress.
I know. Get moving. Colin followed Samuel down the cliff's edge. Part of it was a narrow trail, but most of the way down was comprised of thousands of steps cut into the rugged rock wall. They twisted and turned downward, sometimes spiraling back under ones above. Below, far off in the center of the valley, among the streams, grand trees, and rolling fields, sat Shota's graceful palace. Colorful flags flew atop towers and turrets, as if to announce a festival. Colin could hear the distant flags snapping in the wind. She had trouble seeing it for the splendid place it was. She saw it as the center of the spiderweb, a place where threat lurked, threat for Richard. Samuel sprang down the steps ahead, happy to be going back to the protection of his mistress, no doubt thinking about cooking Colin in a stew when his mistress was finished with her. Colin hardly noticed the hateful glances from the big yellow eyes. She, too, was lost in a world of loathing. Shota wanted to harm Richard. Colin kept that thought foremost in her mind. It was key. Shota wanted to deny Richard happiness. Shota wanted Richard to suffer. Colin could feel angry power welling up inside her, ready to do her bidding and eliminate the threat against Richard. Colin had at last found the way to defeat Shota. Shota had no shield against subtractive power. It would slice through any magic she threw out. Colin had found the path, the gateway, through the labyrinth of protection layered over her magic to the core of its power. This side of her magic was protected by precepts that governed its use. Like the wizard's keep, protected by shields of all kinds, there was a way to get through. She had found a way to get through the keep, and she had used her reason to find the justification that traced its way through the maze of rationale forbidding this magic's use. She had tapped its ancient strength, its destructive power. Colin felt the power coursing up through her and down her arms. Blue light snarled and snapped around her fists. She was nearly lost in a trance of purpose. For the first time, Colin wasn't afraid of the witch woman. If Shota didn't swear to leave Richard alone, to let him have his own life, Shota was going to be dust before this day was out. At the bottom of the cliff, Colin followed behind Samuel as he bounded along the road among tree-dotted hills and green fields. Snow-capped peaks all around soared up past a scattering of clouds. Blue deepened in the sky as the sun rose over those peaks. Colin felt as if she had enough power blazing within her to level those peaks. Shota had only to say or do the wrong thing to prove herself a threat to Richard, and she would be no more. The road led up a gentle rise from which Colin could see the spires of the palace through the trees ahead. Samuel glanced back to make sure she was still following, but Colin didn't need his direction. She knew that Shota waited in the grove of trees below. The witch woman was the last person Colin ever wanted to see again, but if it was to be, then this time she intended it to be on her terms. Samuel halted and pointed with a long finger.
Mistress.
Yellow eyes glowered back at Colin.
Mistress wants you.
Colin lifted a warning finger to his face. Threads of blue light crackled around the finger.
If you get in my way or interfere, you will die.
He glanced from her finger back into her eyes. His bloodless lips drew back as he hissed, and then he skittered off into the trees. In a cocoon of seething magic, Colin advanced down the slope toward the waiting witch woman. The breeze was spring warm, the day bright and cheerful. Colin felt no cheer. Sheltered among the towering maples, ash, and oak, sat a table covered with a white cloth and set with food and drink. Beyond the table, atop three square white marble platforms, stood a massive throne carved with gold leaf, vines, snakes, and other beasts. Shota sat regally, one leg crossed casually over the other, her ageless almond eyes watching Colin's approach. Shota's arms rested on the chair's high, widely spaced arms, with her hands draped arrogantly over gold gargoyles. The gargoyles nuzzled her hands, as if hoping to be stroked. A rich canopy draped with heavy red brocade and trimmed with gold tassels shaded the throne's occupant from the morning sun, yet her luxuriant auburn hair shimmered as if touched by streamers of sunlight. Colin halted, not far away, under the witch woman's rock-hard, penetrating gaze. The blue lightning screamed for release. Shota clicked her lacquered fingernails together. A self-satisfied smile spread across her full red lips.
Well, 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 Shota said in her velvety voice. The child assassin arrives at last. I am not an assassin, Colin said, nor am I a child, but I have had enough of your games.
Shota's smile slipped away. She put her hands to the chair's arms and stood. Points of her wispy, low-cut, variegated gray dress lifted in the gentle breeze. Her gaze never left Colin as she gracefully descended the three white marble platforms.
You're late?
Shota held a hand out to the table.
The tea is getting cold.
Colin flinched when a bolt of lightning struck from the blue sky, hitting the teapot. Amazingly, it didn't shatter. Shota glanced down at Colin's hands, and then back to her eyes.
There, I believe it's hot now. Please, won't you have a seat? We will have tea and conversation.
Knowing Shota had seen the ominous blue light, Colin returned the self-assured smile in kind. Shota drew out a chair and sat. She again held out a hand in invitation.
Please have a seat. I imagine you have things you wish to discuss.
Colin slid into a chair as Shota poured tea, holding on to the white top with her other hand as she did so. Steam rose from the cups. The tea was indeed hot. Shota lifted a gold-trimmed platter, offering Colin toast. Colin warily pulled a golden crisp slab from the platter. Shota slid a bowl of honeyed butter across the table.
Well,
Shota said,
isn't this unpleasant?
Against her will, Colin smiled.
Very.
Shota picked up her silver knife and spread honeyed butter across her slice of toast. She took a sip of tea.
Eat, child. Murder is always best accomplished on a full stomach. I have not come to murder you.
Shota's sly smile returned.
No, I suppose you have managed to justify it to yourself. Retribution, is it? Or perhaps self-defense? Punishment? Recompense? Justice?
The smooth smile widened. An eyebrow arched.
Bad manners? You sent Nadine to marry Richard. Ah, jealousy, then.
Shota leaned back as she sipped her tea.
A noble motive, were it justified. I hope you realize that jealousy can be a cruel taskmaster.
Colin nibbled her crunchy toast.
Richard loves me and I love him. We're engaged to be married. Yes, I know. For one who professes to love him, I would think you would be more understanding.
Understanding?
Of course. If you love someone, you want them to be happy. You want what's best for them. I make Richard happy. He wants me. I'm best for him. Yes. Well, we can't always have what we want now, can we?
Colin sucked honeyed butter from her finger.
Just tell me why you wish to hurt us.
Shota looked genuinely surprised.
Hurt you? Is that what you think? You think I am being spiteful?
Why else would you always try to keep us apart, to hurt us? Shota took a dainty bite of toast. She chewed for a moment.
Has the plague come yet?
The cup paused partway to Colin's lips.
How do you know about that? I'm a witch woman. I see the current of events. Let me ask you a question. If you visited a young child sick with the plague, and the child's mother asked you if her child was going to recover, and you told her the truth, would you be guilty of causing the child's death because you foretold it?
Of course not.
Ah, it is only I, then, who am to be judged by different standards.
I'm not judging you. I simply want you to stop interfering with Richard's and my life together.
A messenger is often blamed for the message.
Shota, the last time we saw you, you said that if we stopped the keeper, you would owe us a debt. You asked me to help Richard. We stopped the keeper. It cost us dearly, but we did it. You owe us.
Yes, I know, Shota whispered. That is why I sent Nadine.
Colin could feel the rage of power surge within her.
Seems a strange way to show your appreciation, sending someone to try to ruin our lives. No, child, Shota said gently. You see things through blind eyes.
Colin had to help Richard by finding out all she could, but she would defend herself and Richard if she had to. Until that became necessary, she could endure this wandering conversation if it would help get the answers they needed. And they did need answers.
What do you mean?
Shota sipped her tea.
Have you lain with Richard?
Colin was taken off guard by the question, but she recovered quickly. She shrugged one shoulder in an off-handed manner.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have.
Shota's gaze rose from her tea.
You're lying.
Pleased by the smoldering tone in Shota's voice, Colin lifted an eyebrow.
It's the truth. You don't like the message, and so now you hold malice toward the messenger?
Shota's eyes narrowed, her gaze locked on Colin as if drawing a bow and aiming an arrow.
Where, Mother Confessor, where did you lie with him?
Colin felt triumphant at Shota's obvious displeasure.
Where? What difference does that make? Have you turned from witch woman to gossip now? I was with him in that way, and that's the truth, whether you like it or not. I'm no longer a virgin. I was with Richard, that's all that matters.
Shota's gaze turned dangerous.
Where? She repeated.
Shota's tone was so threatening that Colin forgot she needn't be afraid of the witch woman.
In a place between worlds, Colin said, suddenly embarrassed to reveal the details. The good spirits took us there, she stammered. The good spirits. They wanted us to be together.
I see. Shota's gaze cooled. Her small smile returned.
I'm afraid that doesn't count. Doesn't count? What in the name of all that's good does that mean? I was with him, that's all that matters. You're just vexed because it's true.
True? You were not with him in this world, child. This is the world we live in. You were not with him here, where it counts. In this world, you are still a virgin.
That's absurd.
Shota shrugged. Think what you will. I am satisfied that you have not been with him.
Colin folded her arms. This world or another, it doesn't matter. I was with him.
Shota's smooth brow puckered with mirth restrained.
And if you have been with him in the place between worlds where the good spirits took you, then why have you not been with him in this world, since you are no longer a virgin here, as you say?
Colin blinked.
Well, we thought it best to wait until we were wedded, that's all.
Shota's soft, exultant laugh drifted out through the morning air.
You see, you know the truth of what I say.
She held the teacup between the tips of the fingers of both hands as she sipped, more balmy laughter escaping between each sip. Colin fumed, somehow feeling she had lost the argument. She tried to look confident as she leaned back and took a drink of her own tea.
If it pleases you to delude yourself with punctilios, then be my guest. I know what we did,
Colin said.
I don't know why it's any concern of yours anyway.
Shota looked up.
You know why it's my concern, Mother Confessor. Every confessor bears a confessor. If you have his child, it will be a boy. I told you both to remember that before you lay together. Lust dims thoughts of the consequences. From you, the boy would be a confessor. From Richard, he would have the gift. Such a dangerous melding has never taken place before.
With a patient, reasoned tone, meant almost as much for herself as for the witch woman, Colin hid her inner terror at Shota's prediction.
Shota, you are a witch woman of great talent, and you may know it would be a boy. I grant you that. But you could not know he would be like most of the male confessors born in the past. Not all were like that. You have as much as admitted that you don't know if it would be so. You are not the creator. You can't know what he will choose to do, if he even chooses to give us a child.
I don't need to see the future in this. Almost every male confessor was like that. They were beasts without conscience. My mother lived in the dark times caused by a male confessor. You would visit upon the world not only a male confessor, but one with the gift. You cannot even envision such a cataclysm. It is for this very reason that confessors are not supposed to love their mates. If she bears a male child, she must ask the husband to kill the baby. You love Richard. You would not ask that of him. I have warned you that I have the strength to do what you will not. I also told you that it will not be personal.
You talk about the distant future as if it has come to pass. It has not. Colin said. Events do not always unfold as you say. Yet other things have already come to pass. Because of Richard, you still live. You told us that if Richard and I were able to close the veil, saving you and everyone else from the Keeper, you would be forever grateful to us both.
And so I am.
Colin leaned forward. You show your gratitude not only by threatening to murder my child should I have one, but also by trying to kill me when I come to ask your help?
Shota's brow twitched. I have made no attempt on your life.
You sent Samuel up there to attack me, and then you have the effrontery to rebuke me for coming prepared to defend myself? The little monster threw me on the ground and attacked me. If I hadn't had a weapon, who knows what he would have done? This is your gratitude? He said that when you were through with me, you would let him eat me, and then you expect me to believe in your benevolence. You dare to profess gratitude?
Shota's gaze shifted toward the trees. Samuel!
She set down her teacup.
Samuel, come here at once!
The squat figure loped out of the trees, using his knuckles to help himself bound across the grass. He ran to Shota and nuzzled against her legs.
Mistress,
he purred. Samuel, what did I tell you about the Mother Confessor?
Mistress told Samuel to go get her.
Shota looked into Colin's eyes. What else did I tell you?
To bring her to you.
Samuel, she said with rising inflection.
Mistress said not to harm her.
You attacked me, Colin put in. You threw me on the ground and jumped on me. You said you were going to eat me when your mistress was through with me.
Is that true, Samuel?
Samuel not hurt, pretty lady,
Samuel grouched. Is what she says true? Did you attack her? Samuel hissed at Colin. Shota thunked him on the head with a finger. He shrank back against her leg. Samuel, what did I tell you? What were my instructions?
Samuel must guide Mother Confessor back. Samuel must not touch Mother Confessor. Samuel must not hurt Mother Confessor. Samuel must not threaten Mother Confessor.
Shota drummed her fingers on the table. And did you disobey me, Samuel? Samuel hid his head under the hem of her dress. Samuel, answer my question at once. Is what the Mother Confessor says true?
Yes, mistress,
Samuel whined. I'm very disappointed in you, Samuel.
Samuel, sorry.
We will discuss this later. Leave us. The witch woman's servant skittered away into the trees. Shota turned back to face Colin's eyes. I told him not to harm or threaten you. I can understand why you would be upset and think I meant you harm. Please, accept my apology. She poured Colin more tea. You see, I have no intention of hurting you. Colin took a sip from her full cup. Samuel is the least of it. I know you want to hurt me and Richard, but I'm not afraid of you anymore. You can no longer harm me. Shota's smug smile returned. Really? I'd suggest you not try to use your power against me. My power? All things I do, all things everyone does is using their power. To breathe is to use my power. I'm talking about hurting me. If you dare try it, you'll not survive the attempt. Child, I have no wish to harm you, despite what you think. A brave thing to say now that you know you can't. Really? Did you ever think that the tea might be poisoned? Her smile widened when Colin stiffened. You, of course not. I told you I have no wish to harm you. If I wished to harm you, I could do any number of things. I could have simply put a viper behind your heels. Vipers dislike sudden movement. If there was one thing Colin hated, it was snakes, and Shota knew it. Relax, child, there is no viper under your chair. Shota took a bite of her toast. Colin eased her breath out. But you wished to make me think there might be. What I wished is for you to realize that confidence can be overrated. If it will please you, I will tell you that I have always regarded you as singularly dangerous for any number of reasons, that you have found a way to tap the other side of your magic means little to me. It is the other things you do that frighten me. Your womb frightens me. Your arrogant certitude frightens me. Colin nearly leaped to her feet in anger, but then she suddenly thought of the children dying back in Aidendrill. How many of them hung near death, shivering in fear for their lives, while Colin stubbornly debated fault and imputation with Shota. Shota knew something about the plague and about the winds hunting Richard. What significance was Colin's pride in the face of that? She remembered, too, part of the prophecy. No blade, forged of steel or conjured of sorcery, can touch this foe. In much the same way, crossing swords with Shota wasn't going to work. This was serving no purpose, and worse, solving nothing. Colin admitted to herself that she had come for vengeance. Her true duty should be to help people who were suffering and dying. How would anything but pride be satisfied by striking out at Shota? She was stubbornly putting herself and her insecurity above innocent lives. She was being selfish. Shota, I came with hurt in my heart because of Nadine. I wanted you to leave Richard and me be. You say you have no wish to harm us and that your intent is to help. I also wish to help people who are desperate and dying. Why don't we, for the moment at least, agree to take each other's word as true? Shota watched over her teacup. What an outrageous concept. Colin reasoned with her inner fear, her inner rage. Her anguish at the things Nadine did make Colin want to strike out at Shota. What if it wasn't Shota's fault? What if Nadine was acting on her own, much the same way as Samuel had? What if Shota was telling the truth, if she had not meant to cause harm? If that were true, then Colin was guilty of a grievous wrong in wanting to strike out at Shota. Colin admitted to herself that Shota had been right, that she had been justifying vengeance simply to be able to tap her deadly power. She hadn't been willing to listen. Colin placed her hands on the table. Shota sipped her tea as she watched the blue glow around Colin's hands fade and finally extinguish. Colin didn't know if she would be able to call it forth should Shota strike, but she realized it didn't matter. Failure in her true task was too great a price to pay for pride. Colin felt that this was the only thing that could truly have a chance of saving her future, of saving Richard, and of saving those innocent people back in Aidendrill. Richard always said to think of the solution, not the problem. She would trust in Shota's word. Shota, Colin whispered, I always thought the worst of you. Fear has been only part of it. As you warned, jealousy has been my taskmaster. I beg you forgive my obstinacy and insolence. I know that you have tried to help people before. Please, help me now. I need answers. Lives depend on this. Please, talk with me. I'll try to hear with an open mind the things you say, knowing that you are the messenger and not the cause. Shota set down her teacup. Congratulations, Mother Confessor. You have earned the right to ask me questions. Have the courage to hear the answers, and they will be of aid to you. I swear to do my best, Colin said. Chapter 41 Shota poured them more tea. What do you wish to know? Colin reached for her cup. Do you know anything about the Temple of the Winds?
No.
Colin paused, cup in hand. Well, you told Nadine that the winds hunt Richard.
I did.
Could you explain that? What you meant?
Shota lifted a hand in a vague gesture.
I don't know how to explain to a woman who is not a witch how I see the flow of time, the passing of future events. I guess you could say that it's something like memories. When you think about a past event or a person, say, the memory comes to you. Sometimes you more vividly remember past events, some things you can't recall. My talent is like that, except I am also able to do the same with the future. To me there is little difference between past, present, and future. I ride a current of time, seeing both upstream and down. To me, seeing the future is as simple as it is for you to remember the flow of past events.
But sometimes I can't remember things,
Colin said. It is the same with me. I can't recall whatever happened to a bird my mother would call when I was very young. I remember it sitting on her finger as she spoke soft, tender words to it. I don't remember if it died or if it flew away. Other events, such as the death of a loved one, I remember vividly. I remember the texture of the dress my mother wore on the day she died. Even today, I could measure out for you the length of the loose thread on the sleeve.
I understand.
Colin stared down into her tea.
I too remember well the day my mother died. I remember every horrid detail, even though I wish I could forget.
Shota placed her elbows on the table and twined her fingers together.
The future is that way with me. I can't always see pleasant future events that I wish to see, and I sometimes can't avoid seeing those things I abhor. Some events I can see with clarity, and others, despite how much I wish to see them, are only shadows in the fog.
What about the winds hunting Richard?
With a distant look, Shota shook her head.
That was disturbing. It was as if someone else's memory was being forced on me, as if someone else was using me to pass on a message.
Do you think it was a message or a warning?
A thoughtful frown creased Shota's brow.
I wonder that myself. I don't know the answer. I passed it on through Nadine because I thought Richard should know in either case.
Colin rubbed her forehead.
Shota, when the plague started, it started among children who had been playing or watching a game.
Yala.
Yes, that's right. Emperor Jigang,
the Dreamwalker.
Colin looked up.
You know of him?
He visits my future memories occasionally. He plays tricks, trying to get into my dreams. I won't allow it.
Do you think it possible that it was the Dreamwalker who gave you this message about the winds hunting Richard?
No. I know his tricks. Take my word, it was not a message from Jigang. What of the plague and the Jala game?
Well, Jigang used his ability as a dreamwalker to slip into the mind of a wizard he sent to assassinate Richard. He was at the Jala game. The wizard, I mean. Jigang saw the game through this wizard's eyes. Jigang was incensed that Richard had changed the rules so that all the children could play. The plague started among those children. That's one reason we think Jigang was responsible. The first child we went to see was near death.
Colin closed her eyes and covered them with her fingertips at the memory. She took a settling breath.
While Richard and I knelt at his side, he died. He was just a boy. An innocent boy. His whole body was rotting from the plague. I can't imagine the suffering he endured. He died before our eyes.
I'm sorry, Shota whispered.
Colin composed herself before looking up.
After he had died, his hand reached up and grabbed a hold of Richard's shirt. His lungs filled with air. He pulled Richard close, and he said, "The winds hunt you."
A troubled sigh came from across the table.
Then I was right. It was not something I saw, but a message sent through me.
Shota, Richard thinks it means that the Temple of the Winds is hunting him. He has a journal from a man who lived during the Great War of 3,000 years ago. The journal tells of how the wizards of that time placed things of great value and great danger in the temple, and then they sent the temple away.
Frowning, Shota leaned forward.
Away? Away where?
We don't know. The Temple of the Winds was atop Mount Kimmermost.
I know the place. There is no temple there, only a few bits of old ruins.
Colin nodded. It's possible the wizards used their power to blast the side of the mountain away and bury the temple in a rock slide. Whatever they did, it's gone. From information in the journal, Richard believes that the red moons were a warning from the temple. He further believes that the Temple of the Winds is also known more simply as the Winds.
Shota tapped a finger against the side of her teacup.
So the message could have come directly from the Temple of the Winds. Do you think that's possible? How could a place send a message?
The wizards of that time could do things with magic we can only wonder at. The Slif, for example. From what I know, and what you have told me, my best guess would be that Jagang has somehow stolen something deadly from the Temple of the Winds and used it to start the plague.
Colin felt a cold wave of fright flood through her. How could he do such a thing?
He is a dreamwalker. He has access to untold knowledge. Despite his crude objectives, he is anything but stupid. I have been touched by his mind in my sleep when he hunts in the night. He is not to be underestimated.
Shota, he wishes to extinguish all magic.
Shota lifted an eyebrow. I have already told you I will answer your questions. There is no need to convince me of my own interest in this matter. Just as the danger from the Keeper, Jagang is no less a threat to me. He promises to eliminate magic, but to accomplish those ends he uses magic.
But how could he have stolen this plague from the Temple of the Winds? Do you think it even possible? Really?
I can tell you that the plague did not start of its own account. Your guess is correct. It was ignited through magic.
How can we stop it?
I know of no cure for plague.
Shota took a sip of her tea. She glanced up at Colin.
On the other hand, how could a plague be started?
Magic.
Colin frowned.
You mean that if magic could start it, even though we don't know how to cure the plague, magic may be able to stop it? Is that what you're suggesting?
This is the end of Side 1, Part B. There is no need to change the balance control. Simply turn this cassette to Side 2 and continue with Part B.